Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm looking at the TV screen here in the studio, right here at the Gabe Kuhn Show, in the 92.9 FM ESPN studios. And it looks like we're going to have a Game 5, Mariners-Tigers. This is about the sixth inning. Tigers must have opened it up while I wasn't watching. 9-3 final. It was 3-3 last time.
Bro,
I looked up.
Baez hit a home run. I think it was his first playoff home run in 8 years.
That's nuts. That's last time I looked at the screen, it was 3-3. Now it's 9-3 and the game's over. So, there's that.
It was 3-0 at one point.
We do have David Cobb on the line right now, and we need to bring him on without further ado. He's from CBS Sports, covering college basketball, college football. Also, a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Gabe Kuhn Show, Thursdays, Jeffrey Wright and company. David, how's it going?
Hey, man. It's going well. Just kind of enjoying seeing the Bill Belichick saga unravel in real time here. I don't know if you've been following that today, but wow. Yeah, that's kind of taking up my afternoon, just sort of reading up on how everything's going sideways there, maybe even quicker than we expected.
Yeah. So how am I supposed to understand this situation? Bill Belichick is discussing buyout options as we speak, right? And really this is sort of in response to everything bad that's happened. But then overnight we had an NCAA investigation into impermissible benefits with one of their assistant coaches. Correct.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how when things are going poorly, NCAA violations
right.
They just appear. Oh wow!
And I saw the impermissible benefits were just they gave sideline passes to a player's family. That's not much.
The horror! Can you imagine, Gabe? Yeah. Oh, that is horrific.
That's very much. Hey, let's see if we can fire this guy with cause or something. Say like drag him through some mud so we have a reason to fire him.
You nailed it, Gabe. It's the old Tennessee Jeremy Pruitt playbook here, where you have an underperforming coach and you're looking to get off of a big buyout. And so I think what we're seeing happen right now, and I'll give credit to our partners at Heels 24/7 who have boots on the ground and who are very plugged in on this. What we're seeing is North Carolina circling the wagons, realizing this is going very poorly, realizing they need to get rid of Bill Belichick pretty quickly, and they are looking for reasons to fire him with cause. And what that ultimately is going to lead to is Bill Belichick, I think, going to say, hey, don't disgrace me by firing me with cause for some petty recruiting violation. We can come to the table. I'm not enjoying this either. And we'll reach a buyout. That to me feels like the most likely outcome based on what we're hearing today. So
yeah.
Wow. What is that? What a disaster.
This is an assumption of mine. I don't think we have an answer to this. I'd assume Steve Belichick's not in line to take over, right?
Oh.
I would assume because that was the original plan, right?
Can you imagine that would be hilarious if they just doubled down and said, "Yeah, we're done with."
We planned on doing this. We're gonna stick to our plan.
No, I mean, the defense has been so bad. Everything's been so bad. It's all been horrible. So, no, you got to clean house here. And now it's like, how far back have you set your program? Who wants to go work for the morons that thought this was a good idea?
Right.
Mac Brown has to just be doubling over with laughter at all this because you know, he took them to bowl games every year, and they were like, nah, that's not good enough. North Carolina football, we need to upgrade. And now, you know, it might be a long time before they get anyone in there who can do as good as Mac Brown was doing.
So I'm sure by now you've seen the Hulu documentary is canceled, so there's that.
Yeah.
I would say this, though, and it was really canceled because there was a lot of negative within the footage that they got. What I would tell Hulu and Disney is it's not really a documentary if you only want to cover positive things. It's not really the point of a documentary. But also, I do want to see that footage. That needs to come out.
Well, I'm sure Hulu and Disney would love to get it out there. I would resubscribe to whatever I got to subscribe to watch that. But I'm sure it was Jordan Hudson, right, probably, or Bill, or some combination of their little partnership there that that was saying, nah, let's maybe not actually go through with this because there's nothing good. That's the problem with sports. This is a side note, but like the problem with all these sports documentaries now is that they're just puff. It's just puff pieces. It feels like the days of actually getting a real, legitimate, authentic, independent look at things is kind of over. Like, and that's a shame. Like, you know, I mean, I still enjoy some of these shows, but. You know, I don't know. It felt like 10, 15 years ago, the 30 for 30s, when they were first really kind of getting big, like those were good you were getting the multidimensional real look at it from a lot of different sides. And now I feel like most of these documentaries are just puff. And that's the whole reason why this Bill Belichick documentary was going to be a thing, was so they could do puff. And now it's like there's nothing to puff. So it's canceled.
All right. Now, very important question to one David Cobb that I have to pose right now, David. You ready? Is Arch Manning college football's first flop?
What?
It's a joke. It's a joke. This is The Athletic. I talked about it on the show already. For those that are thinking I'm the one coming up with that question, that's not true. This is the Athletic, New York Times. There was a big article and a big fuss made about it. What did you think of that headline? That's absolutely ridiculous.
I just don't even understand what it means. Like first flop. Like what does that mean?
He's the first bust, I guess.
Oh, he's, ever?
That's what the question is. That's the only way I can take it. I will say this. I have a rule. If the question being posed with a certain think piece article or opinion article, I think is a stupid question. I don't read the article, so admittedly, I haven't read it. But I think a lot of people reacted to strictly the headline and the little, you know, blurb. Many people are having a bad year in college football, but Arch Manning is having one of the worst. The quarterback has gone from preseason Heisman Trophy favorite to projected number one NFL pick and projected number one NFL draft pick to a man synonymous with failure. I mean, listen, not correct. I do think to a certain extent, though, a lot of babying Arch the past 24 hours in the response with the responses to this article.
Oh, well, for sure. I think it's the old two things can be true thing. Like, I don't think writing about Arch Manning's struggles is off kilter or off balance. I mean, we've talked about it at length on here. I mean, he's performing like a below average college quarterback right now. That's just what it is. But, you know, at the same time, who was responsible for making this Arch hype what it was? It was the media. I mean, it was us to a certain extent. It was me. I had him top 10 in my preseason quarterback power rankings. Trey Wallace put out a clip today of Arch Manning speaking at SEC Media Days and saying, you know, he was asked about why, you know, how do you feel about being a preseason Heisman Trophy favorite? And he had a great line. It was like, well, I don't know where people get this stuff. I've played two games, so I've got a lot to prove. And so if we just really take it at face value, I mean, I think it's not necessarily Arch's fault that Arch has that last name and that he was just sort of gifted these accolades and this five-star prospect billing. But at the same time, like, he's not played well. So, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I it doesn't have to be personal. Like, we don't have to make it personal and, like take, like, personal jabs at the guy. But at the same time, like, yeah, like, he's not played well, and I'm sure he would be the first to admit that. It's just one of those things where that was a crappy headline, engagement bait. You know how it is, and that's the sad part about the world we live in now, where you get engagement when you post something that stirs the pot, you know, and that's why, I mean, I'm awful at social media now because, like, I don't really like to do that, you know, and anyway, so No, I we're babying Arch a little bit and trying to defend him from critics. And then of course the critics are just gonna see that and keep leaning into it and say, well, wow, when we come back
it's to working.
Arch Manning, we get a lot of social media traction, you know. So I don't know. I mean, it's all dumb. I hate it all.
But the amount of people coming to his defense, like ask any NFL draft pick that was a bust, ask Jamarcus Russell, ask Johnny Manziel, ask all these guys that have gotten negative headlines in the past and have quite frankly probably had some unfair things said about them. Like, I see this every day. I mean, Stephen A. Smith is on First Take every day talking directly out of his rear end. You know what I mean? So, like, I found it bizarre how many people were just so ready to, you know, box over Arch Manning catching some criticism and a nasty headline, a nasty take. But that happens every day.
Well, you know this too. Like, I think part of it's if Stephen A. or Skip Bayless said something inflammatory about Arch, it's like, all right, whatever. That's what they do, you know. But then it comes from a New York Times account. You're like, all right, well, first off, you guys really don't even cover sports anymore. So, like, you know, all right, they're an easy target. They're an easy target to pick on because it's like, since when did you guys get into the hot take business, you know?
I have an important question, though, about that Texas team. When we go through, like, why they have struggled, why they're sitting here at 3-2, why they lost that game to Florida last week, is Arch the biggest problem? Truly, like, I want to ask, is Arch the biggest issue with that team?
No, I mean, he's one of the issues. Like, if Arch was everything that we had built him up to be, then he would be the type of player who could overcome an iffy offensive line and poor running game, right? Because we built him up to be a superhero. We built him up to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. We built him up to be a potential, you know, early first round draft pick. And if he were that, then the other issues with Texas wouldn't be as apparent. Because a great quarterback, an elite quarterback, their best trade is typically that they cover up and mask the flaws of the rest of their team. However, like, he's not that. And so I think it throws off the entire nucleus of the team because, look, I mean, you can look at it going into the season and say, well, yeah, Texas has a lot to replace on the offensive line, and they lost almost all of their top pass catchers. But Arch Manning might be good enough to where those issues don't really end up hurting them all that much. And I think Sark probably was looking at it that way to a certain extent. And when he is not what you thought he would be or hoped he would be, then it puts all the other issues into focus. So I think that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, we talked about Sark on Monday and how I've never really bought into him as like a top five, top 10 coach in college football, even though he's paid like it. And he had a really good year last year. Although the one win in the college football playoff against Arizona State, to me, meh. You know, if they don't miss a targeting call, Arizona State may win that game. But I dug into the numbers, and I want your reaction to these numbers. And maybe you know them already, but I just want to hear what you have to say about it. Sark, when I dug into this, at Texas, 2-8 against AP Top 10, 9-15 in one-score games. Like, Sark, I feel like he doesn't catch the amount of criticism, at least nationally, that he should.
Well, it's wild, right? Because there have been coaches with similar levels of performance at Texas who have essentially been ran off or discarded.
Right.
I mean, you look at Tom Herman, and I mean, his win-loss record isn't too far off from what Steve Sarkisian's is right now, and they decided that wasn't good enough. I think what it is, it's like, all right, he's going to get a little bit of a pass this year because they made it to the, you know, the semifinals last season. And if he doesn't come back and get back to that sort of plateau again next season, then maybe that's when we have that conversation about Sark. But, you know, I think to a certain extent, you come from that Nick Saban school of rehabilitated coaches. And, you know, the other part of it is like, in his prior positions, you know, you think about Steve Sarkisian at Washington, Steve Sarkisian at USC. He initially had the Pete Carroll blessing. So he's got the Pete Carroll blessing, the Nick Saban blessing. We look at coaches differently when they have that. And then two, when he failed previously, it was partly due to, you know, personal health issues, right? Yeah. And so it was like we never even really got to fully understand what he would be as a head coach over the long haul. And we're sort of learning that right now. So I feel like in real time this season is sort of teaching us how good of a coach Steve Sarkisian is. And so, you know, I think he gets a pass for this year. I really do. I really think that because of what he accomplished last season, that even within that Texas fan base, there's not going to be a huge appetite to really cast a lot of doubt on Sark. And I think next year will be the year when we really have that conversation.
Now, they have Oklahoma at home this weekend. Pete Tham reported yesterday, John Mateer, Oklahoma star quarterback. He's pushing to be on the field. But if he did play, he'd be 17 days out of surgery, and they predicted that this would be a month with his throwing hand. And Brent Venables did not sort of echo those sentiments. He said, I don't know anything about the injury. When they tell me he's available, I'll let you know. How do you see this game going? Because I look at Vegas and the line they're throwing on this game. It started as Texas -1.5. I did hear that per certain FanDuel sports people, sportsbook people behind the scenes, that was a line if John Mateer was actually going to play. If he wasn't going to play, it'd be -5.5, but it's actually moved in Oklahoma's direction, -1.5. So, like, this line is all over the place. And I don't know, you know, Oklahoma without John Mateer, still a really good defense, but can Michael Hawkins really take advantage of a Texas defense? It is pretty good. Like, I don't... Just because Texas has struggled, don't lose sight of the fact that, you know, Anthony Hill Jr. is an unbelievable linebacker. Colin Simmons off the edge, great, great DN. They have some really good guys in the back end, really good defense in general. So I'm struggling with this one to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it really all depends on John Mateer. And then even if he does play, how effective is he? I mean, don't forget, he suffered that injury. I forget which game it was, but he actually played through it during the course of a game. Now, what does it feel like post-op, right? Because you suffer the injury in the moment. All right, you play through it. You have adrenaline. Once you get it worked on, you know, then how does it feel? So, like, even if he does play, I believe it's his throwing hand, right? So, like, how close to 100% are you? I mean, that's what this game comes down to. John Mateer is that much of a difference maker for Oklahoma. And I mean, he's a ceiling raiser. With a healthy John Mateer, Oklahoma is good enough to compete for a national title, and I have no doubts about that. Michael Hawkins is serviceable, but if it's Michael Hawkins, you know, I'm maybe leaning a little bit towards Texas here. At the end of the day, though, the best unit in this game is that Oklahoma defense. I mean, that Oklahoma defense is going to be good enough to keep them in the game regardless of who is playing quarterback. And I mean, you look at some of the turnover issues that Arch Manning has had, that Oklahoma defense might be good enough to turn him over a few times and set up Michael Hawkins with a short field. So, you know, I was surprised, like, when Texas opened as a favorite here, and the fact that the line has shifted towards Oklahoma suggests to me that, you know, pretty good chance John Mateer is going to play.
All right, now your quarterback rankings have published your top 50. Can't believe you do 50. That's a lot. That's a lot to sort through. But number one, Ty Simpson showing up. And you know what? I'm a big Dante Moore fan. You know this about me. I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly, David. When we look at that passing offense, it has been the most consistent in college football for the past 4 weeks, for the past four games they've played. Those wide receivers, obviously a big help. But this weekend, I do have them on upset alert. Going to Missouri, going to Faurot Field, and that Mizzou team's riding high, 5-0. This is gonna be a good game in my opinion. Are you sort of in that same boat with me?
So what, Gabe? You're from Missouri, right? Can you tell me what the nickname of the state of Missouri is?
The nickname, the Show Me State.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I feel about Missouri. I need them to show me. You know.
Yeah.
Like they played Kansas. Okay. Like you beat Kansas. Like that's nice. It's just been such a light beginning for Missouri relative to pretty much anyone else in the SEC. They beat South Carolina. Okay, that's cool. Lenore Sellers was hurt for a good portion of that game. Doesn't really count. Now you get this Alabama offense that's operating at peak efficiency coming into your place. And I need Missouri to show me. And if they can, I think it changes the entire perception around what Missouri is under Eli Drinkwitz. Because I think the perception right now is that they are a mid to upper tier SEC team that benefits from a soft schedule and is never going to be a real threat to win the league or honestly to really make the college football playoff. And if Alabama goes in there and beats them by 10 points, that remains the narrative. So, like, I need Missouri to show me that they are legit. And until further notice, I'm going to rock with Alabama here because the last 4 weeks, they've been as good offensively, especially when you adjust for the opponent, right? Like, when you look at what they did at Georgia in the first half and then what they did last week against a pretty good Vanderbilt team, I mean, you know, they're playing as well offensively as anybody in college football.
Yeah, there is one stat, though, that I do like about Mizzou. Only one team in college football that's top four in total offense and total defense in both of those metrics, and that would be the Missouri Tigers. Now, we could go through their schedule and say that's the reason, but they really do have some dudes on each side of the ball, and that's a testament to Eli Drinkwitz and the way he's recruited there. You know, I never thought they'd be able to keep up with the rest of the SEC when they ultimately took that step, but they've done a pretty good job over the long haul of being pretty competitive every single year.
Well, they have. I mean, they caught a gem in the portal and Ahmad Hardy, the running back from Louisiana Monroe. And then, I mean, I think Penn State fans would kill to have Bo Prabula at quarterback, right? So, you know, they got Drew Aller. I think they'd take Prabula in a heartbeat. But maybe the credit goes to Eli Drinkwitz for actually unlocking Bo Prabula. So, I'm with you. I mean, I'm open to the idea that Missouri might actually be good. But, like, this is your opportunity. This is your chance. You're going to have the national spotlight. What are you going to do with it?
Do you feel the same way about Indiana coming up this weekend, going to Oregon? I mean, they've shown me a little bit with Illinois beating them 63-10. Like, I'm not taking that away from them. I think they're a college football playoff caliber team. But this is a different beast altogether. Going to Autzen, middle of the day, on CBS. You know, I asked the question a couple of weeks ago to you, is Indiana better than they were a year ago? I think this is the week we find out, no?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think they are. I mean, everything we've seen so far suggests they are. I mean, they played a light schedule last year. I would argue that their schedule so far this season, I mean, they opened with patsies, but they crushed Illinois, as you mentioned. They won at Iowa, which is never an easy thing to do. I do think Indiana is better. I do think Fernando Mendoza is actually an upgrade at quarterback, which is pretty remarkable because they had good quarterback play last year. So, now the question is kind of, to me, it shifts more towards the Oregon side. It's like, all right, we've seen you guys beat Penn State and that was impressive in the moment, but how good is Penn State really? And you know, can you guys rise to the occasion, against a team that's clearly got a whole nother level and another gear, than most others in college football. So, I mean, I think it was a huge test for the Oregon defense. I mean, that's a unit that we haven't probably talked about a whole lot, but you know, they look good against Penn State. That was their quote test. But again, I mean, Drew Aller is struggling. That offense is not anywhere close to what we thought it might be at Penn State. And this Indiana offense, man, they can really get it going. I mean, they can put up 500 yards in a game in a hurry. So yeah, that's probably my question here is how good is that Oregon defense? And I think we'll learn.
Final week 7 question, and this is sort of an alternate storyline that I'm watching pretty closely. It'll be the late game on NBC. It'll be the Big Ten matchup. You have number 15 Michigan going into the Coliseum to play USC, and USC lost Illinois. They need a win. They need a win in the Big Ten, especially against a ranked opponent really badly, and Lincoln Riley needs it in the worst possible way. I'm watching to see if this is the spiral out of control for Lincoln Riley at Southern Cal, because this could be very telling what happens at 6:30 on Saturday.
Yeah, I kind of wrote today that in my opinion, I think this is a tenure defining 2 week stretch for Lincoln Riley and USC. So it's obviously, as you mentioned, Michigan this week, and then next week it's at Notre Dame. So they're off to a good start. Jaden Maiava looks good at quarterback, but the questions remain about their physicality. Can they hang on the lines of scrimmage in the Big Ten? Those questions will be answered starting Saturday night and then certainly again next week at Notre Dame. So if Lincoln Riley somehow comes out of this two-week stretch with two victories, okay, then yeah, like we're off and rolling, man. Like you're back on track. You deserve to be one of the highest paid coaches in college football like you are. And we're talking about USC as a Big Ten title contender, as a college football playoff team, all of that. But the other side of it is if they go 0-2,
right,
then we're looking for the exit ramp, I think, at that point with Lincoln Riley and USC. And honestly, that feels like the more likely scenario to me. is 0-2 in that stretch. So, yeah, I'm with you. It's going to be super fascinating. You know, that USC-Michigan game, you can kind of look at the winner and start to see them as more of a contender. You can pretty much eliminate the loser from the conversation.
Now, if that happens and it's the 0-2, they're looking for the exit ramp, James Franklin to USC, question mark?
They can just do a coach trade.
That's not out of the realm of possibilities, in my opinion. Although that would be a hell of a, you know, Penn State has been used to playing ball a certain way for quite a while. That'd be a switch up. Lincoln Riley in there with like that spread out air raid concepts all the time, offense and defense. We'll see if he can catch up if he got to Penn State. But that would be a bit of a culture shock at Penn State.
Yeah, I think their fans might be ready for it though. I think they're a bit fed up with the dink and dunk and, you know, the Drew Aller experience, which has been replicated often through the years with Liam Clifford. And,
yeah, I have truly had this conversation with so many people. Every quarterback that has been there since like 2000 is the same guy, minus Trace McSorley. He was a little bit different.
Yes,
but Sean Clifford, Matt McCloin, Aller, like you just keep going through all these names. They're all the same person.
Well, and it's maddening, right? Because you see a Will Levis leave and go have success. You see a Bo Prabula leave and go have success. And it's like, hold on now, what are we doing wrong here? Because, I mean, it's not a talent issue. And I thought Andy Kotelnicki would fix it, the offensive coordinator. For whatever reason, though, it feels to me like James Franklin kind of is keeping his imprint on that offense, maybe a little too heavy. But, yes, I'm with you, man. USC, Penn State, LSU, a lot of programs around the country right now that could benefit from a coaching trade. You can't necessarily afford the buyout. The results aren't bad enough to fire, but you just need something new, something fresh.
No doubt. Well, you are the man, David. We will catch up again on Friday.
All right, man. Sounds good.
He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football for CBS Sports. College football is rolling right along. We're into week 7. It's kind of crazy. It's really wild. But we're going to have football for 49 days straight, starting tonight. And just as always in the South of college football, we are excited for every single game, every single weekend. And there's simply no better place to catch college football than Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. You walk in, the energy's going to hit you. 20 HD TV screens. They will tune it to whatever game you want, whatever you're betting on. Everybody next to you is going to be locked in. Every game's going to be front and center. And the seating in there, it's more comfortable than what you have in your living room. And it doesn't really matter what you're there for. You could be all in on your favorite team, or you could just love big matchups in college football. Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica is the spot to feel every play, every score, and every win. You grab a seat, you can place an order from their game day menu, a food menu, and you can get in on the action. You can order beer, no doubt, but they'll also bring you some food from Guy Fieri's Flavortown restaurant right there around the corner from Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. It is game day done right, folks. They have a full-service sports betting experience, in-game wagering, staff betting windows, and 10 self-betting kiosks. It's the ultimate in college football viewing experiences. If you want to get into the games and get on the action, you need to get into Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. We will see you on Saturday. Must be 21 or older to gamble. No one to stop before you start. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Now it's time to get to a trip around the National Football League ahead of Week 6. Let's do it next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. Okay, so the Harbaughs, is this example number 5 million of them just sort of trading players and coaches back and forth. But they executed a trade, Chargers and Ravens, yesterday. Chargers get Odafe Owe, defensive end from the Ravens, and a 2027 seventh-round pick. And the Ravens get at safety Alohi Gilman, who has played nearly 90% of the snaps for the Chargers at the safety position. And they also got a 2026 fifth-round pick. I think this helps both teams. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Chargers needed an edge. Ravens needed some help in the secondary. That's why they signed C.J. Gardner-Johnson yesterday to their practice squad. They need some improvement. They're 31st in the National Football League. And I went over the stats yesterday, but they make every quarterback they play look like a damn MVP. Quarterbacks they're playing so far this year are outpacing the odds-on favorite in Josh Allen in every statistical category. So there is that. But the Harbaughs getting together for a trade, and Jim Harbaugh has had Greg Roman as his OC the past couple of years. Greg Roman was with the Ravens, but back in the day, Greg Roman was also with the 49ers and DCs and assistant coaches. They just share guys. I mean, that's what they do. If somebody gets fired by the Chargers, they'll end up with the Ravens the next year and vice versa. But this is another example of them just sort of getting together, putting their heads together. Hey, what do you need? You need a DN? Okay, you can have my DN. We need a safety in return. Okay, cool. Let's go ahead and do that. I didn't really know what team to put next to this, but I do remember Odell Beckham Jr. in a Giants uniform the most, so hence why we put out the New York Giants. But on the Pivot podcast yesterday, Odell Beckham Jr. announced that he's going to try to make a comeback into the National Football League. Don't know if it's going to work. Kind of doubt it. But he also said that he is accepting the NFL 6-game suspension for PEDs. I didn't know that he was – I didn't know that that was a thing. I didn't know. And how long has this been – over your head? Why didn't you accept it like a while ago? I don't get it. But he says he didn't knowingly take PEDs, which every person who
no one ever has
the exact same thing. Even in the Balco scandal, for God's sakes, they said the same things. But here's what I love. This is my favorite quote from him on the Pivot podcast when talking about it. He claims when he asked what he tested positive for, he was told, "Your testosterone levels are just too high, brother. Must be nice, man. Nux. You just have high testosterone levels. You didn't get any help from PEDs. You're just a man. You're an absolute man. But Odell, I don't know who's going to sign you. I don't know how a comeback's going to work, but I'll be watching. Hope it works out for you, Odell." Okay. So, Monday Night Football, Jags win 31-28 was the final score, I believe. And final play of the game for the Jags offensively was the stumble Ruski. Trevor Lawrence falls on the ground, tries to get up, falls back on the ground, gets up, runs into the end zone, breaks two tackles. Game over. Game, set, match. And on that play, all-pro defensive tackle for the Chiefs, Chris Jones was caught. Like, Connor, can you explain this to the listeners as well? Because I don't know if they'll take my word for it. If you haven't seen the play, loafing. Like, didn't move.
Walking.
Like, just he didn't do anything. He was asked about the play, and here's what he had to say. He was able to break that many tackles. It was a fluke play. Well, at least they were trying to make a tackle. You were standing there walking, Chris. You didn't even make contact with a defense or an offensive lineman. It's basically, like, this reminds me of the Eric Andre meme where he shoots the guy in the chair, and he says, "We're trying to figure out who did this. Who did this?" That's what Chris Jones just did. He blamed it on the rest of the defense. Brother, you're the one who probably had the best chance to go make the play at the goal line, and you were loafing completely. And if you tackle him there, they probably run out of time, lose the ball game. I saw this and I said, this can't be. This is not a serious comment.
I just rewatched the play. One Chiefs player got hands on him, and it was kind of barely from behind.
I mean, it was.
He didn't really break me. He did.
It was a bit of a fluky play, but the Chiefs defense didn't make the effort to actually get him on the ground.
A bunch of guys did miss him. They just didn't even try.
I find it funny that Chris Jones, like, I don't know, like, point at yourself. To be honest,
he should have been wearing a hot dog costume while he was doing that.
Don't point.
Yeah.
Don't point at the rest of your defense. You were the one loafing the hardest. Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski was asked if Shedeur Sanders, since they traded Joe Flacco, is going to be the number two quarterback. And here's the quote: "I'll let the week play out and make a decision later." Kevin, you're not actually going to make Bailey Zappi off of practice, off the practice squad, the number two quarterback this week, are you? Behind Dylan Gabriel? You're not going to do that, right? Just, you know my criticisms of Kevin Stefanski, right? Like, I've been pretty well documented on that. But the past 2 years, his team is 4-24 under his direction. I understand quarterback situation not good. A lot of money taken up by a guy who's not there in Deshaun Watson. But I don't know if you've noticed that it feels like Kevin Stefanski is like untouchable somehow. And I don't understand that in the slightest. His team's been horrible. Absolutely pitiful. And they have a defense where they can compete. He's supposed to be some offensive guru. And their offense is awful. And I get that they don't have a quarterback. I understand that. But it feels like he gets in his own way a lot of the time. And my biggest criticism from him, like from the Baker Mayfield days and how that all played out, he doesn't seem to conform to the personnel he has, to the quarterback he has. He was making Baker Mayfield do play action and all this zone running stuff. I watched Baker Mayfield with the Bucs through three different offensive coordinators take five-step drops and expose every defense in the National Football League. Why didn't you do that? You know what I mean? You had good wide receivers. You had Jarvis Landry when he was still sort of in his heyday. You had Odell Beckham Jr. right off of his heyday. You had some guys that you could have done some good things with, and all you had was one measly little playoff win in a 10-win season. I think he is the most overrated coach in the National Football League. And please, Kevin, for your own good, for everybody's own good, do not, under any circumstances, make Bailey Zappi off your practice squad your second-string quarterback going in this week. We know what he is. We haven't seen Shador. At least give the kid the benefit of the doubt. You're already 1-4. Season's lost. Dylan Gabriel's playing quarterback for you. Don't be dumb. Bengals head coach Zach Taylor says Joe Flacco is going to start on Sunday at Green Bay. You know where Joe Flacco's only win this year was? Green Bay. So he's played Green Bay 2 times in 4 weeks. This will be his second time in 4 weeks. He doesn't have the same defense, though, that he had then. They won 13-10. Browns defense is pretty good. Bengals, really bad. So good luck to you, Joe. I'm rooting you on. But that will do it for a trip around the National Football League. We'll come back, wrap up hour number 2 with Small Talk next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A week. Today we go out to Ollie Connolly, who writes for The Guardian, and he is reporting on what's going on at North Carolina with Bill Belichick, and it has taken a turn for the worst overnight. This is what Ollie wrote on X. You can go find him, Ollie Connolly, Connolly. But per sources, Bill Belichick has discussed buyout options with North Carolina's hierarchy. Belichick has signaled a willingness to trigger his own $1 million buyout if he cannot find a soft landing with another team or in media. Members of Belichick's coaching staff have already spoken to other schools that are expected to be in the college football playoff about taking on roles during the postseason. From one coach, the rats are leaving the ship. Some staffers believe a change will come within 2 weeks. Reports of serious recruiting violations remain under investigation at UNC. Recruiting and practice violations have already been proven by the school, according to multiple sources. Using recruit violations to knock down a coach's buyout has become a standard practice. If Belichick cannot find a landing spot to trigger his own buyout, he's accepted to accept a greatly reduced compromised rate. Belichick's communication with his staff in the past 2 weeks has been described as weird and distant by multiple members of North Carolina's coaching staff. Multiple coaches were unable to get a hold of him during UNC's bye week. From one UNC defensive assistant, what we've done to these kids is effed up. This is a disaster.
I mean, we all knew it was going to be this way. When he got hired last year, we all were like,
no,
this isn't going to be.
I didn't see it this bad.
We didn't know it was going to be this bad. We knew it wasn't going to work, though.
I didn't think it would be great.
I don't think a single person was really it's going to be successful.
The conversations were way different, though.
We thought they were going to win like six games.
I thought it would be bad in the sense, okay, they win six games, maybe get bowl eligible, but they're not very good. But I was more wondering about Bill Belichick and his level of communication, type of communication with college students, college players, as opposed to the pros he's dealt with for years and years and years. But this is just like a full reputational shot that Bill Belichick has taken after being probably the best head coach in NFL football history. Like, this is not how you want to go out if you're Bill Belichick. And I was wondering, it was crazy. Remember when like the NFL coaching hires were all done? I'm like, why does Bill Belichick not have a job? I guess they knew something that we didn't know at that time. We now know. And these recruiting violations, just for funsies, I wanted to bring up what they are. Apparently, what North Carolina has proven about their own head coach that they really want to fire, get rid of, is that an assistant coach offered sideline passes to a player's family. That's what North Carolina found. This is very much, it's so obvious, so see-through what they're doing. They're trying to find any and all reasons to get rid of this guy at a reduced rate so they don't have to pay as much money. Very, very simple. Very simple. All right, now our number three, half hour number three, I should say, is on the way, and Colton Denning joins next. Can't wait to talk to Colt. Stick around for that.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.